Welcome to the Voice of MPE, the official podcast of Merchant Payments Ecosystem, Europe's largest merchant payments conference. Today, we are at the 17th annual MPE conference, MPE 2024. This podcast brings you interviews with payment industry leaders and professionals from the entire payment world. For more information, head over to www.merchantpaymentsecosystem.com. Today we are talking about the payment acceptance value chain. Mark McMurtry from Payments Consultancy LTD, moderator of this episode, spoke with David Rintel from TrustPay and Igor Skachkov from Payable as they discussed the changing regulations and evolving merchant expectations from acquirers in today's digital era. Discover how these expectations vary based on the size of the merchant and much more.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this MPE podcast. My name is Mark McMurtry. I'm the Director of Payments Consultancy Limited. And today we're going to be talking about the fascinating topic of the changing face of the merchant payments acceptance value chain. I've got two real experts in this field to be joining us in the conversation. I'm going to ask each of them to introduce themselves and their organisations. David, maybe you could go first.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm David Rintel. I'm the CEO of TrustPay. We are an acquirer slash payment services provider focusing on e-commerce payment facilitation, especially on cross-border e-commerce payment facilitation.
Igor.
Yeah. Thank you for the invitation. I'm Igor Skachkov, Chief Product Officer at Payable. At Payable, we focus on two main directions, payments account for our clients and payment acceptance, including payout options globally.
To start with, can you just touch on a bit more of the merchant services that you offer?
Yeah, so we started as an acquirer. We are a principal member of Visa MasterCard, and then we launched our core banking platform. So we aim to provide a full service to our merchants with onboarding them into the payment account, issuing European IBANs, giving them access to SEPA and SWIFT rails, and at the same time accepting payments globally, conventional like Visa, MasterCard, and alternative payment methods.
David.
We are an acquirer as well, although our roots are from the local payment methods space.
Yeah.
We focus predominantly on Europe, where we attempt and try to facilitate the acceptance of all the relevant payment options.
And they're growing, aren't they, every year?
Yes, there is a new one each year, it would appear.
So what do merchants expect from an acquirer today? David, why don't you kick us on there? What do merchants expect from an acquirer?
I think that merchants expect a service. When describing our organization, I do actually like the term payment service provider.
Okay.
Because it contains two very important things that sort of tell us as the industry what it is that we're being paid for. We're being paid to process payments, but also very importantly, we're paid to provide a service. So customers or merchants ultimately expect that you provide them with a service that solves their pain points, namely, in our case, acceptance of payments through various payment options across various very different markets.
What else do you think you can add to this, Igor?
I completely agree with David. So it's important today that the payment service provider or any service organization is focusing on the experience, understanding exactly the journeys that clients have, right? So starting with the pain points, as David mentioned, and then going into details of what exact jobs every merchant needs to fulfill throughout their operational cycle, whether it's payment, and I'm talking about end-to-end journeys. It's not about payment acceptance, it's about you accept payment, you deal with anti-fraud, you provide a sophisticated, seamless checkout experience. Then you have a very good post-purchase organization when you provide reconciliation and then timely settlements. And you know, the faster the better. That's why we, for example, offer the payment account, so to make settlements simple and fast.
How do these expectations change depending on the size of the merchant? Like for a large merchant, have they got other requirements then?
They generally do. So we do not really operate in the SME space all that much. We sort of service predominantly sort of the smaller enterprise merchants.
Okay.
If you have a small merchant, you know, your typical Stripe customer, for example, they're normally very small organizations without any resources dedicated solely to payments. So, you know, to them, it's very much price driven. It should be easy, and they don't have an understanding of payments, or if they do, it's very rudimentary.
Yep.
They normally don't need to understand all that much because they're mostly local, only selling in one country. The larger the merchants, generally speaking, the more expertise they develop in payments. In many cases, they've dedicated payments professionals or entire teams. And then, you know, they expect someone on the other side who understands their problems and who can address very, very specific issues related to fraud, for example, as Igor mentioned, or approval ratios, up and coming payment methods, ideal payment mix for, you know, a particular country. And the discussions can become far more detailed and far more technical very quickly.
Igor, you see any differences geographically?
So even for card acceptance, there are differences in how we accept.
Tell us a bit more about those.
Yeah, so for example, Europe, due to PSD2 and regulation, regulating a strong customer authentication, is heavy 3DS market.
Yeah.
While in the US, you need to be ready that the card transactions are working differently because they have this AVS check of the card link to the zip code. And it's an interesting journey because it influences the approval rate. And also the cross-border payments are not perceived by issuing banks as a norm sometimes. And the issuing banks just say no to some transactions because they are going cross-border. And this is just example for one country. I mean, every country has its own specific. And in some countries, cards are not even like popular. I mean, I'm saying that the cards is a minority of payments. And you need to be ready to partner with a local player. And all this adds complexity to the overall acceptance chain.
At the MPE conference, we just heard about so much more change happening in the payments ecosystem. Change seems to be coming from every angle and every side. What are you seeing really from the regulatory perspective as far as this change? Igor, what are you seeing, you know, about the changing regulations for payments acceptance?
Yeah, I think I'm glad that the regulations are changing.
That's good.
To be honest, to be honest, it's very important because the technology goes far beyond the regulations, and regulations trying to keep up with the technology. And I'm glad that the focus is on the customer protection, because all new technologies introduced recently, like open banking, still fresh, and they are missing the key things that card schemes have been having for many years. And it's good that the new regulation, PSD3, will focus more on customer protection and authentication. And I hope it will add, first of all, security, and second of all, some customer adoption, so customer experience for, let's say, initiating open banking payments and post-purchase experience, how to dispute these payments easily and make it more comfortable for merchants and consumers to use them.
David, what are you seeing about the regulatory impact?
There is there have been quite a few different regulations coming into force over the past couple of years. Going forward, I think the instant payments regulations in Europe are likely to have the most profound impact, as they truly might change the way payments work across the continent. In terms of open banking regulations, for example, I am rather skeptical that you can regulate and legislate innovation. You can set boundaries as to, you know, what you believe consumer protection should look like, what you believe the AML rules and regulations should be. All of that is fine. I think that if there's one thing we've seen with open banking, for example, is that you cannot legislate innovation. I think it just fails to achieve its fundamental basic goal.
Let's explore this open banking more. Firstly, what impact do you think is going to have on the acceptance, you know, value chain?
Well, I'm saying this as a licensed PISP.
Okay.
I think the impact of open banking has been so far far less than originally anticipated or expected.
Still early days, then.
I don't think it's early days. It has been around for a while. Early days, the early days argument was used 2 years ago.
Okay.
And it would have been, it was back then, it's an argument you could use. Today, we are a couple of years down the line. A lot of money has been spent on different open banking solutions by many players in the industry, Eagles and our company included. But the results are underwhelming, and there are other payment options, other payment methods popping up throughout Europe, which are growing very fast, and they have outpaced open banking. I think generally what you see with open banking is that many banks say, okay, there is a legal requirement for us to publish APIs, and they will publish the APIs that meet the most basic regulatory standard in order to comply with the applicable laws and regulations. So in effect, what you get with open banking today is the user experience from 2018, and it just doesn't work. So what we're likely to see is that there'll be a new regulation to address some of the pain points. But again, it'll be, let's say, 2025, 2026, and we'll get a user experience people expected in 2021.
Igor, please share some of your perspectives on where you think open banking has got to and where it's going.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't know, it's about market specifics or about regulation or something else, but I want to compare open banking with PIX, which was launched in Brazil like a few years ago, right? And the results are much more impressive, right? The whole Brazilian population is using PIX heavily. It's now more used than ideal in the Netherlands, I think, for like 4 years only, right? And compared to open banking, you see that it's a big gap between these two payment methods, though they all use banking rails, instant payment for PIX, and the instant payments are coming for open banking. Hopefully that will add some value to the open banking functionality, but also it's all about experience and payment confirmation, right? When the payment lands on the bank account, it's not always easy to say today whether the authorization ends in the settlement or not. So there are details in all of this.
At the end of the day, in order for any payment method to work, you need all parties in the value chain to have a vested interest in the payment method working. Cards work because both issuers and acquirers have a vested interest in providing the best service possible. If you look at Ideal, for example, it is a scheme, not a card scheme, but a scheme nonetheless, where issuers or the retail banks have a vested interest in providing a good user experience. Same thing with Blik, which coincidentally is owned by 6 Polish banks and MasterCard, I believe. Similarly with Bizum in Spain. The issuers and the acquirers have an interest in the payment ecosystem working. In case of open banking, the acquirers, us, the PISPs, are interested, but the issuers or the banks have been largely dragged into this almost against their will. And it remains a fundamental problem. And while I, you know, you do have use cases and it does work a bit, we're very, very far from the originally anticipated revolution.
When we're looking at the acceptance value chain, we've seen a whole new range of merchant intermediaries joining, sitting in between the merchant and the acquirer. What's your view on which of these are having success? Is there a role for all these different types of organization? David, do you want to kick us off on this one?
There are a number of different players. I think the one of the most talked about innovations of past couple of years are payment orchestrators.
Very much so.
Payment orchestration platforms. And they do add value in a nutshell. However, there are certain pitfalls or there are certain aspects to payment orchestration that merchants should be aware of. First of all, the reason why a merchant would bring in a payment orchestration platform is that there is just too much going on in the space. There are too many new payment methods, risk management providers, third-party vendors, and integrating all of these platforms technically into your own platform might be very costly and tedious. So that's when payment orchestrators come in, and they come in handy. The problem is that you are bringing in a party which has a very significant degree of control over your destiny in payments, so to say, not to be overly dramatic. Yep. If they're doing a good job, if they can integrate your new preferred vendors, acquirers, payment methods, whatnot, it can be a great experience. However, if they do a bad job, then you're essentially held hostage to a subpar vendor who has created a very nasty bottleneck in the value chain.
Igor, what other types of merchant intermediaries do you having a significant impact on the acceptance value chain?
I think that all these payment aggregators I would call them the payment service providers, but with a focus on the experience, right? They are not maybe having the licenses, but the focus is on giving the merchant the experience the merchant needs. And it's not only about the checkout experience for consumers to provide a smooth payment flow, but also the experience of connecting the right vendors towards the merchant platform. For example, merchant gets not only payments, but get connection to some invoicing systems, to reconciliation systems, and many more. Means that instead of merchant going and getting access to all these vendors independently, these vendors are already within the platform. Merchant just needs to sign a contract with every one of them and enjoy the whole experience the merchant needs.
How are all these changes we've been discussing, how are these changes benefiting merchants and their end customers? Igor, what's your thought about the benefits for the merchants and their customers?
I mean, there are more and more merchants in the world, right? And more and more merchants that go global. Because before, merchants started and focusing on one market. Now it's very easy with this range of payment providers to say, oh, actually, I can go to some new market very easily. And the value is that merchants doesn't need to think much about how to enter the new market in terms of payments. So merchant focuses really on own product and own service without much thinking, okay, what will it cost me to start my operations outside Europe? Because payment providers have an expertise to help with this. And I think this is the main convenience. So quick start, and second is expansion to new markets.
David, what's your thoughts on some of the other benefits for merchants?
I'll maybe try and address the other group that you mentioned in your original question, the consumers.
Probably the most important. We must never forget that.
Yes. Well, you know, ultimately, if you have no one to pay for your services, you do have a bit of a problem. I'm a big believer in payment choice. And if you look at the European landscape over the past couple of years, you have many new payment options popping up. Some are better than others, but some are truly great from a user experience standpoint. I think we should admit that cards post SCA have not entirely recovered as the 3D secure ecosystem isn't always the best user experience you can get. And many of these new local payment methods which are mobile first, mobile native, they're biometric based, the user experience is just superior. You have better approval ratios, so you know you avoid the frustration of your payment being declined for God knows why, where you call your merchant, where you know at whom you're shopping, and the merchant doesn't have any idea either, because it's one of the famous do not honor declines. It just creates, many of these local payment methods are creating a seamless, predictable user experience, which in many cases is superior to what we as acquirers with you know, our card payments can offer.
Well, time just seems to fly when we're chatting about the merchant payments acceptance. But as we're wrapping up this podcast, I'd love to hear, you know, from both of you about some of your predictions for how you see the, you know, the merchant payments, you know, value chain, let's say in 5 years' time. What are your predictions with our crystal ball? And maybe I'll get you back then to see how well you've done. Igor, do you want to kick us off on that?
Yeah, actually, I would like to refer to David's prediction yesterday. He said that the old payment methods will not disappear fast. And this is true. The legacy will stay with us for a long time. And I don't expect a big change in 5 years, to be honest. I'm thinking about, like, in 15 years, we will still be using Zofort and some other payment methods like we got used to. But in 5 years, I think everyone is expecting that CBDC will change the landscape. And we'll see how the conventional banks will react on this, because I feel they're a bit afraid of this change. And they think how to adapt. So I'm really looking forward for this moment to see how this service will be adopted first by consumers, right? And then see the reaction of the market.
Let's hear some of your predictions, David.
There are a couple of predictions we believe, or there are a couple of scenarios we believe are likely. I'll still be talking about Europe, which is where my core expertise lies. We expect card payments, namely sort of Visa, MasterCard payments, to further lose their market share as more European countries roll out different either account-to-account based domestic schemes or mobile wallets based on tokenized cards, you know, the mobile pace of this world. We think that the card schemes are likely to struggle with the response. There has been a lot of talk about click to pay, the Visa MasterCard mobile wallet. However, it hasn't received the issuer support that it probably would need to receive in order for this to be a success. But, you know, the card schemes, they do know what they're doing and they do have a big budget. So let's see how that one pans out. I personally remain skeptical about open banking truly becoming the revolution some of us believed it would be. I don't think open banking has a very good shot at major success in markets with good entrenched local champions, the Netherlands, Poland, and other markets where you do have a good local payment option. But ultimately, when it comes to, you know, any crystal ball predictions, in any uncertain market with many new initiatives, I think it's important for providers and merchants alike to admit that while it's nice to talk about, you know, what our predictions for the future are over morning coffee, it is very likely that we'll be dead wrong on many cases. And as far as we're concerned, the only safe and sensible approach is to be mentally prepared to respond to unexpected and surprising situations, and make sure you select your partners and structure your organization accordingly.
My name is Mark McMurtry, Director of Payments Consultancy, and it's been my pleasure moderating this MPE podcast on the payments acceptance value chain and talking with Igor from Payable and David from TrustPay. Thank you both very much. I hope you've enjoyed the conversations, and we look forward to hearing comments as well. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning into the official MPE podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to the show and check other video interviews with other industry leaders on our YouTube channel. For more content, follow Merchant Payments Ecosystem on LinkedIn and Twitter. Don't miss out on our Positivity magazine, and remember to subscribe to the MPE newsletter at www.merchantpaymentsecosystem.com.